everybody. It's Warm Orange here for the podcast Taking in the Scene.
Don't sound so excited. Jeez.
Well, I mean, because like it's like a task. It's like some days, you know, it's raining outside.
Professor Orange.
It's cold. And the weather. Oh, actually, sorry. When this is released, it may not be cold. I don't know. Oh, man. What have I done?
It's a temperature outside.
It's very tepid.
Yeah. Just time stamped this episode.
Oh, no. They'll know that this is recorded exactly on December 4th. How dare they? No.
Oh, damn. Oh,
wow.
You want to give them my address, too?
No. I will not. But yes, welcome to this episode where we are going to be interviewing a rope person that is very near and dear to my own heart, because this is a person
who else
that
is
I've
here, though?
Accredited. Oh, my bad. Sorry. Let me take a step back. We got Denzel Darko in Mango Sorbet, but also we got our interview person too. But I'll let Mango and Denzel have the mic for a second.
This is off to a great start. I'm Mango Sorbet.
Hello, world.
I'm your wild girl.
It's something about time. Is it Time Bomb? Is that the
cherry bomb?
Okay, cherry bomb.
But I am Denzel Darko.
Denzel Darko.
Ooh.
Denzel Darko.
And who are we here with, Orange?
We are here with a human known as Luna. And this particular human, like I said, is near and dear to my own personal heart because I've learned all the rope things. Well, most of the rope things I know from this person. So I live to kind of tie in a way that will make them proud. But Luna, as a person, Luna is a rope enthusiast to the core. They enjoy tying, getting tied, and self-tying. And they have eagerly been learning rope about since 2016. And they have since picked up an enthusiasm for teaching and occasionally performing as well. To which I've also gotten to take photos of them performing, and it's like really cool because those photos are from like what, 2017, and I still haven't finished editing them.
Sorry, CP
you should
time.
Get on that.
Right? Yeah.
I'm working on it.
Sorry. Yeah.
They're almost in black and white. They're so old.
They're no, actually. So no, sorry. It'll take over the whole episode. Like, there's a story. There's a reason why.
So welcome, Luna.
Hi. I'm glad Orange is on the tepid energy. I'm here to meet that level of energy.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. It's
been a long week.
We'll keep it chill today. Yeah.
Low power mode.
And it could be any day of any week, and it could still have been a long week. So,
but it is December 4th. As we have established.
Anybody needed to know? Yeah,
it's December 4th. We're so excited to have you here. Rope is such a huge part of the kink world, and it's such a part of Orange's world, and we haven't really gotten to like dig into that. So I know Orange is like thrilled for this episode. We're all thrilled for this episode.
I was about to say, I think we all are.
We're all
into
we all.
Rope 2 as well. So it's like that's a good point. It's a fun episode for all of us.
Oh my gosh! Like, wait, Denzel, I forgot you and Luna have been doing a lot of tying together as as well as a few other people in this small circle, right?
We haven't actually tied together. We've just talked about it.
What?
We've talked about it.
It's all the theory is alive. Like,
we're all like rope cousins.
Rope cousins, yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we are.
Yeah.
Wait. Is that like 7 degrees of rope bacon? Like Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, but yeah. I
something like that.
Yeah,
and
something
yes.
like that.
Shout out to Hollow Man. Good movie.
Orange, do you want to get us started with some questions for Luna?
Yes. So the first question, and this is a question that's very important because it was not included in the bio. So Luna, how long have you been slinging rope?
Pretty early in 2016, I got introduced to tying and took to it pretty quickly, and was really lucky to find a tying partner like within the first month of going to events, and was tying with people very regularly. The first tying partner that I had, we were tying like maybe 5 days a week.
Oh my God.
Some days, some weeks six. Because we both just had a lot of availability and like wanted to do the thing. And so
are y'all still connected?
Unfortunately not, but, you know, I am better for all of their presence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to start at that time, or what got
you
into it?
Just like a small curiosity, I went to an educational event and they taught like four different subjects just briefly. And rope was one of the ones, and it was mostly a PowerPoint and we actually didn't get to do much with the rope. But I was like, this is really interesting. It had not occurred to me that it was like a thing that people actively did with each other.
God. Wait, important question. Was it a good PowerPoint or was it really crappy?
Was there animations in it?
Yeah.
I don't think there was any animations in it, but I love a PowerPoint. So it's hard to have a bad PowerPoint from my point of view. I mean, it got me interested. So I guess it did a good job if I was interested, right?
It presented it to you.
Yeah.
And that's what a PowerPoint does.
Yeah.
PowerPoint presentation.
And I came back afterwards and was like, I have follow-up questions. Where do I learn more about this? So I want to go to
events.
Very
good PowerPoint.
Hell yeah.
Yes. There's power tops, PowerPoints.
I think
hard points.
It needed more time allotted to it, really. But
fair enough. And but were you already in the kink world?
No, not really. I didn't realize that I was kinky, despite being very obviously kinky. I didn't quite realize, and I didn't realize there was a whole community until someone mentioned a play party one time, and I was like, that's interesting, and that's why I ended up at this event.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I have like a lot of follow-up questions, especially around the not realizing you're kinky, but maybe we'll save that for the end of the interview.
Well, I mean, is it rope related?
It's more just person, you know, person to person curiosities. I'll pass it over to Denzel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm curious.
so most of it's not specifically rope related. I didn't realize that rope was a kink that I necessarily had. I think I probably had watched like a couple of porn videos that had some bondage, but not anything that I think is particularly engaging about the bondage part, but just like there being a power exchange thing. And but did have a little bit of rope in it, but it just never occurred to me that that was what I was into until it kind of presented itself as its own thing in this PowerPoint that was great.
It sounds like it was like an awakening of like a kink blossomed in you after that.
Yeah. And it was also really intriguing because they tried to teach a knot during this PowerPoint. This is why I said it wasn't long enough. But they tried to teach a knot at the closing part of the PowerPoint. And I was very intrigued with just like how it engaged with my brain and trying to learn how to do the thing. And yeah, you know, it's kind of got like a little aspect of being like a puzzle to figure out. And and also just like a skill you can do with your hands. And
I have a slight question. So 2015, just looked it up. February 2015 is when 50 Shades of Grey came out. Did that have any influence at all into you kind of being interested in kink in general, or is that just inconsequential?
No. What a okay. off shot.
because 50 Shades of Grey did bring kink into the mindset of a lot of society.
I mean, I get where you're coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it sounds like
I appreciate that.
It was a stripper, for the record. A stripper told me about a play party, and I was like,
support sex workers.
All right. Yeah. Or, at the time, I was also a stripper.
Support performers and sex workers, because they're two different groups.
So it sounds like there was a component of like community that really helped like establish like your beginning into art, or into rope in itself. Mm-hmm. So like, could you talk about like what it was like to navigate it as a newcomer into that space for a bit? Or talk about it, how it feels now.
Oof. Very different, you know, coming into things, you have a lot of kind of excitement. And I think now I'm a little bit more jaded, unfortunately, just because the way that really like rope culture sets a certain stage, and there's some issues in rope culture, and I've had those issues, and
feel free to talk about what those issues are. That's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. We're definitely going to talk about those things today.
Oh, good. Yes.
In the beginning, I was, ignorance is bliss, and I didn't know what I didn't know, but I was excited about all the things. And so, you know, kind of have that newbie energy of like wanting to just like do the things and be involved. And so I was going to a lot of events and meeting lots of people and feeling in a social mood, which I'm not always, that comes and goes for me. It was fun.
As an additional question, like, especially when you were early in the scene, was there, I guess kind of creeping a little bit into one of the issues, was there an issue with your perception as somebody who was interested in this kink? If, like, you must fit in this box, which you, I don't know if you did or you didn't, but was there, like, that kind of pressure, like, you must fit in this box or else?
I didn't necessarily feel like that. I had to fit into a box, but I think in some ways I may fit into the boxes that people would want to push me into anyways. So maybe I was just not feeling pressure.
Can you expand kind of on pressure. That?
Well, you know, I am a person who presents as pretty femme. And also, like, I like to be tied. And so that, I think, is, like, one of the expectations is, like, when people see a little femme person that they're like, oh, I want to tie him up. And obviously they want me to tie them up. And at first that was good. Mm-hmm. It got old really quick.
What changed?
You know, I'm also very interested in tying. I love to tie. Mm-hmm. I love to tie. I love to be tied. I love to self tie. And, I did have some stuff happen where it was like, my expectation was that I was invited to something to be tying, and I was actually invited to be tied. And I was like, oh, that's just
okay.
Clearly. Wait, really? Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oof. Yikes.
Yeah. And just like having that little bit of, and then also not quite getting footing as, especially from like other riggers, mostly cis males, who like don't necessarily, especially in the beginning, didn't necessarily see me as a top, just seeing me as a bottom. Even though I was actively like had a bottom who I was topping and was topping other people in rope. And so even though I was actively being a rope top, they just kind of ignored that bit because it didn't fit in their box.
Yeah. What was that experience like?
You know, disappointing. Right. It was super shitty. Like that first time that it occurred to me, that first time that it really happened, it was like a photo shoot and there was some new people and there were some people that I knew and kind of the whole group, like we were all out at lunch and they unanimously invited me and I like had a little conversation with one of the people who was going to be bottoming and I thought like we were going to tie together, but there was somebody that I didn't know. So like, it wasn't like, sure, you know how it's sometimes you're like, oh, I like you. Do you like me? I don't know. They don't like me.
Oh, I see.
Right? So I thought I was going to be tying and I showed up in the, I'm tying, here's my rope. And it was like, the other person who was tying was like, this isn't where I was thinking it was going.
Oh.
It was just awkward, really. It wasn't like a super big issue, but it was like, okay. And then I was just like, I'll just sit over here.
Well, just to
not be very helpful,
just to potentially lighten the mood a little bit. Can we talk about the controversy with you and Rox and never tying them in your rope? Hashtag called out. I'm doing it.
You took a picture of a rock I tied.
I know, but how many times have you bought a rope or bought a rock to your rope tying? And it's like, oh, I forgot there was a rock.
Oh, that. Yeah. So I have this thing
where the outside of the
I mean, this is just like every time, and this is moving far into the story, you know, past the beginnings of rope and well into like suspension stuff. And what Orange is talking about is as a counterweight, sometimes I will carry a very heavy rock deep into the woods with the thought that I'm going to use it as a counterweight, and then I forget that I have it and it never gets used, and I'm like, why did I carry this rock out here? It's so heavy, and now I have to carry it back and I didn't even use it.
That was just a pre-workout.
Yeah,
you know, get your arms ready for
probably on one of those occasions Orange has carried the rock or there or back. So make he's privy to this.
It's a rite of passage.
Just a little bit salty, just slightly.
Just
rock and
carry around this rock for no reason.
I'd love to come back to the fact that you're not a cis man. And I'm not very well versed in the world of rope, but in my experience, it's sort of ruled by cis men and a sort of very specific type of cis man. And I don't have like a particular question so much as like, what has it been like for you as a not cis man in that world?
Yeah, I think in general, things are taking a step in the direction of trying to be less centered around cis men. And that's been really nice. But also, personally, I've been taking a step away from being in the same position as a cis man and teaching classes that are specifically for queer and trans people. And that's kind of really helped and changed like how I fit into community, because it's kind of a different community. Yeah.
So you've changed your environment, which made it feel.
Yeah, I think it's been a little bit of a struggle to feel like it was fully a space where I could thrive and where I could be myself. I don't know. I mean, I think that generally the rope culture is realizing that's it's an issue, mm-hmm. And taking some baby steps and moving in the right direction. You know, that can sometimes stumble, right? Because baby steps, but yeah. It's working its way.
But creating that space, like, that is a huge component, that huge step. So, like, what are in that space, like, what are some things that you want your people who come in there to, like, be able to learn and gravitate towards in rope?
I mean, really whatever interests them as far as how rope works for them and how it engages with them. But I just want them to feel like not everything is centered around white men. So I think that's...
It's a beautiful hope.
Yeah. And it's feeling good so far in all of the events that, you know, we've had in that vein of...
So just as like a additional part to that question, because you kind of mentioned like you want people to feel like they can learn what they want to learn. Do you feel that there's any like manufactured barriers, as in like, you know, people say, oh, you can't do this because you can't do this thing, or you can't do this until you learn how to do that? Specifically, if we want to get into the topic now, I don't know if we want to launch the discussion at this time regarding...
You're leading the episode.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, we're doing it. All right.
Throw us in.
We're firing.
DEFCON 4!
I'm firing my lasers. So specifically around... as a specific example, people say you shouldn't tie people you can't lift. That was a specific quote that was attributed to somebody who does tying. And, you know, I have respect for that person as far as their tying style, but that particular statement has been echoed by a few people. So how do you feel about that particular?
I disagree.
Discourse.
I tie people who are larger than me, who are taller than me, who are heavier than me, and done thoughtfully. I have not had any issues. I think that all rope is risky. So to say it is safe is maybe questionable, but that's any rope to say it is safe, right?
Sure. And just to go back in and shore up this, because I did misquote. I think the quote specifically was, you shouldn't suspend people you can't lift. I think that's what that person was saying.
Yeah. I don't find that to be true.
And what is your experience of just fat phobia and rope been like?
You know, I have tied people who have come to me with those same stories of people telling them they can't be tied, they can't be suspended safely. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, probably not by that person.
Yeah.
I don't know, because they don't want to learn how to mitigate the risks. Mm-hmm. And it's not really about the inability to mitigate the risks.
Right.
It's about their unwillingness to do so. Mm-hmm. Every person is different, and you should tie every person in a way that works for them.
Yep.
We're all nodding really hard.
Whether they are larger than you or not, they should be tied what works for their body, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's that always the way that I approach doing rope with people, is just not saying like, you know, here's the box of how I tie and do you fit into it necessarily. Right. But if I want to do rope with somebody, then it's working with them to collaborate on like what that's going to look like.
A little bit less cookie cutter and more individualized.
Yeah. And if people can't make alterations, then they have more to learn.
Yes.
Yeah. I honestly feel like, and maybe I'm just speculating because I have a bias, but I honestly feel like that's in a big way the difference between tying with someone who is like queer or trans versus tying with someone who is straight and cis and white.
It's because queer people are, it's like we already have been through this. It doesn't have to be one way.
Right.
It's it can look so many different ways. Like queer can look so many different ways. Rope can also look so many different ways.
Yeah.
And interact differently and feel differently. And so it should be different. Like,
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how whiteness for so many people and cis for so many people feels like a default. So I'm imagining in their world of tying that they view their way of tying as the default.
Well, there's this kind of term of like the one way or the true shibari.
The one true way.
Yeah, the true shibari, right? Okay, so there's people who really hold that just like cisness, just like heteronormativeness, right. They hold this like belief that there is one way that is right.
Mm.
And within that one way, that maybe like that very specific style of tying that they do, maybe those people don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
And
that makes sense.
But that's like, if you're not able to adjust the way that you tie, then I think that that's an issue for everybody.
It's a fundamental problem.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes much deeper than just you saying like, I can't tie this other person because they don't fit the models. Like, why is there only one model for this period?
Exactly.
If I want to make a dozen cool little cookies, you know, and you only give me one, you know,
cookie cutter,
then it's not as fun.
And people in or previously in the rope scene who have held that belief and who tie a very specific way and think bottoms should fit into their rope as opposed to their rope should fit onto their bottoms.
Right.
I've heard bad things, not just from people who are bigger or people who have like, you know, a bad shoulder or aren't as flexible. Like, I have heard bad things from experienced bottoms who are very flexible and strong and like actually train for rope and things like that. Like aerialists who have like sturdy bodies and still get hurt and it doesn't work for them because they're not trying to make it work for them.
I mean, if you're an inflexible top in rope.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the economy.
The economy sucks.
Oh
economy.
Man, the Dow was down 6 points today.
but the economy of ideas regarding who knows what and what skills you have when you bring to the table, it's one of those things where like you don't know what you don't know, and I'm really frustrated that that's kind of the default excuse that we all kind of stick with, because it's a little bit less about yes, you don't know what you don't know, but are you trying to find out what you don't know?
Mm. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not an inability to learn, it's an unwillingness to. And that just makes those people assholes.
Chosen
in my opinion.
Ignorance.
And just to talk about the economy of ideas, I want to bring up the Mark Twain quote, because I love that quote so much.
Samuel Clemens.
Which the quote is, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth's all one's lifetime. I might have read that last part wrong. But the comment there is like, if you travel, you can kind of break through those barriers of seeing that bigotry and just kind of understand how the other side lives and how people adapt, how people live. And in rope, if you just kind of take that time to go be willing to learn, you might find out, I can tie a TK a different way. I don't have to put the arms high behind the back. I can put it in front of the arms. I don't have to tie the arms at all. And you have this thing, these adjustments.
Speaking of travel,
so rope, on a slightly different interpretation of what you've just said,
aren't you a world traveler?
Travel is actually, I think, a real barrier for people, because learning rope for me has involved a lot of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
It's cost expensive, it's time expensive, and not everyone has the ability to do those things. And I think that's probably been a barrier in a lot of people's education.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah,
that's absolutely something that I was really fortunate, especially in the beginning of my learning rope, that I was doing rope 5 and 6 times a week, and I was traveling to places. I was able to go to conventions specifically for rope and learn from national and international educators.
That's incredible.
Like, not everyone has that opportunity. It's a real barrier, I think. There has been some steps in the right direction, especially like during COVID, where things went more virtual. And I think that there's been some really good things to come of that. I do think that does not replace in-person learning and feedback and instruction.
Right.
But it is still a valuable tool.
Would you do VR rope?
VR.
Oh, that sounds cool.
I'm just saying.
Oh, man. I don't know anything about that. So.
Well, actually, VR robe could be a thing, but that's also a barrier.
It sounds like it would
that's
be way easier barrier. On my hands, though.
That's a cost barrier.
So I'm just VR imagining watching someone else do VR rope and having their hands like moving and they're just standing there and nothing is in front of them. They look like a sim.
I've had some scenes where I'm like, oh, like my hands, I have some inflammation in my hands and stuff. And so I have pain in my hands. And sometimes I'm just like not able to tie. And I have had some scenes where I'm like, I'll just sit here and I'm going to tell you person who's tying what to do to you person who's being tied. And that's how I'm part of the scene now.
That's
that I'm
great.
Just like,
coach.
Yeah.
Coach Luna.
Coach Luna. That's me.
It's
and that can be really fun sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally cool. I'm like imagining the scene. I like that a lot. That's very fun. Topping through
one of my tying partners did something during COVID when they self-tied and they like did an Instagram live where they had come on and say how they wanted them to tie themselves.
Oh my gosh.
And they did. That's another like, I mean, like that's this a VR kind of, you know,
it is.
It's a whole
interaction.
New space.
Yeah. No
where
kidding.
People from across the world are able to be part of your scene sort of.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I watch documentaries and people fall in love through VR.
So yes,
like,
I would do VR rope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, VR would be a thing. I mean, I'm down.
I'm open.
although the VR does come with its own cost. So I do want to be sure to highlight that.
I would not pay for a VR.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Whatever.
A
VR headset.
Yeah. I can't
that's
afford
somebody
that.
Who financially supports that.
Yeah. This is where our listeners can fund us if you want to be funding Luna's VR.
Luna's VR. We will include whatever appropriate money sending things.
Yes.
Yeah,
as we said
you'll
before.
Get like a discount for like the first lesson.
Oh,
okay, now.
We can't
put my words in there.
Luna's like, I don't think I'm going
to. I do offer private lessons. Yes. I haven't done anything virtual, although I did do a private with someone. And we didn't end up doing the full time that they paid for. And
you get the refund.
We were like, no. They asked that we do something virtual, but we have not done it yet. So, and I told them, I don't know how that's going to go because I've never done it before, but I'm open to trying it.
Yeah.
So if you ever need assistance with doing virtual things, and actually, I'll just talk to you afterwards. Cause
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I had this whole
take a question off the air.
But like from a adjustment perspective, what do you feel has made rope a staple kink in general? Because like, you know, you seem very ingrained in rope and you seem to know a lot. You've traveled, you've gone to classes. Why is rope always like there as a staple, like one of the
versatility?
Big...
Yeah.
I mean, it can be part of so many other scenes. It can elicit so many emotions. It can just be used in so many different ways that I think it's easy for anyone to find a way to engage with another person or with themselves through rope.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what makes it a big staple because you can use it any way that works for you, really.
Pretty visible, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're at a party and someone's tying, it's like
there's
centerpiece.
A level of exhibitionism in it as well.
Yeah, I mean, people love to watch other people tie. People love to be tied. People love to tie. It's a fun thing.
I am people.
I am people.
Me is people.
I mean, sometimes I don't agree with that statement, but for now, we'll go with it.
I want to bring us back to like how you feel in rope, both tying and being being tied. What do you love about it? Or what do you hate about it?
There's
so
much complexity there. There's so much that I love about it.
Tell us all the things.
Okay. So I'll start with tying. As far as being the person who is doing the tying on another person, being the top, however you want to frame that.
Or a rock sometimes.
I think there's so many things that engage with me. For one, it's like an artistic expression. It's like a medium that I can work with. I have always thought that the human body is something really beautiful. Figure studies in my background a lot. And so I love to draw people. I think that the ways that people's bodies can shape themselves and the curves and the folds and the bends, they're all so lovely. And being able to interact directly with that is something really special, I think. And I love it. And then also the way that it is a puzzle and kind of like having to strategize around what's going to work to, you know, how it's going to work with this particular person and the things that we're doing. And can we go from this position to this position? And just kind of making it fun and engaging for my brain. I also have some like strategy board game stuff in my background that
just a small game.
Now
of course
seeing...
that got orange
attention.
Game.
Well, okay.
Just for context for Denzel Mango and the rest of the world. Yeah. Luna and I and one of Luna's family members, we played a board game. We played it from Saturday morning until Sunday evening.
And this isn't necessarily unusual the way that I play.
No sleeping?
No.
We slept and then we woke up.
Oh, this time?
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, but sometimes there's not any sleeping.
For the record. When I play sometimes we just have like a six, it's like that.
Like a little weekend game time.
We ain't brushing our teeth.
This started way back. I mean,
wow.
Maybe when I was in middle school or like early high school, I started playing, you know, like I think the first game that I ever played was probably Catan, which a lot of people know that one.
What? Hey,
a lot of people know the game, so it's a good one to bring up. And then, you know, moving on to more obscure games like the ones Orange likes.
We don't yuck people's yum on this podcast, Orange.
First of all, I do want to take the moment to talk about
Catan for the record. Stop game shaming.
Well, I just played my first game of Catan this year.
But I do want to emphasize that thought terminating cliches are a problem in the kink community. So don't yuck my yum as a thought terminating cliche. I'm working on some stuff to kind of address that and talk about that more in detail, but not right now because we're talking about rope and board games.
Yeah,
this is my
fair
thing.
Enough.
And then of course there's the power exchange aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And on both sides of that, I find that to be really satisfying. So from a top side, it's really fun. It's really nice to really feel like I'm in control.
Mm.
And then on the bottom side, it's really nice feeling to give that away and feel like I don't have any control and just give the control to somebody else. It's like very freeing.
Yeah.
But it can also be very satisfying to be in control. Yeah. So, you know, both of them are really good. And then being in rope also physically is just a feeling that I really like. It's hard to explain. It's nice. It hurts. It's challenging. I don't know.
And would you describe yourself as a sadomasochist?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to. I think I knew the audience.
I also like to hurt people.
Yes.
Hurt people.
That makes me giggle.
I'm about to say.
So somebody in this room might know.
There's a relic of a phenomenal event.
A phenomenal
event. My body was a canvas for a piece of performance art.
It was great art, though.
That's it was awesome. Great art.
It made me giggle.
It made a lot of people giggle. It made me a legend.
That's awesome.
And now I got a broken paddle thanks to Luna.
Oh, that was Luna?
That was Luna.
Oh my god.
Not my paddle, but yes, I borrowed it from somebody and I was like, oh no, I broke somebody's paddle.
Meanwhile, all of us are like,
that's an honor.
And just for context, in case people didn't catch that, Luna and Denzel did an impact scene. Luna broke a paddle. Oh, was it on Denzel's butt?
Thigh, I think. Yeah.
Thigh?
Okay. On the front or the back?
Like side, like front side.
Thighs of steel.
Yeah. It had like circles. In
acrylic.
It. Yeah. And so I was trying to get like the imprint of the circles on there. And I just maybe like we did one that was pretty hard. And I was like, I didn't make the marks gonna hit you one harder.
Right.
And like we were like eye contact. Okay, we're into this. Like, and then I hit him really hard and the paddle broke. And I was like, oh God.
Yeah. I think I was like, yeah, you got one more. And I'm like, you know, whenever I'm playing, I'm always like, I always like extend that appendage. I'm like, let's do this. This is the last one.
Denzel made it
such a good one that like.
Everybody, it was
let's be honest. Let's be honest.
Kind of a group scene. So there were a bunch of people around and everybody was like,
well, no, but look, I'll say Denzel.
Wild.
And now everybody wants to make me paddles that like won't break on me. Like T-Bones come up, he's like, yeah, this
oh
one's
no,
made out of skateboard
everyone wants
deck.
To make you paddle.
Yeah, because they're all like, yeah, my goal is to not I want you to be hit
That's
with
awesome.
It and not break. Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to be hit with this shit.
But Denzel, there's an underlying story here, which is you have thighs of steel.
Yeah.
Thighs of steel, chiseled, like chased. That's the wrong word.
I'm training for
I don't know if they're chased.
I'm training for a biathlon, so.
Yeah. Those runners, nice, you know? Firm.
Excellent, excellent, Denzel.
Wait. I was going to say it's awkward because you know, I'll tell later what that is. But okay, moving on. So moving on to our man. What question are we on?
I got a question. What's your approach, like the process to an actual rope scene? So you know, the atmosphere, the feel. What's your headspace? How does it look if you have control of as many variables as you have control over?
I think for me, it always starts very casual. I'm, you know, always keep open communication. I do think that power exchange is sexy and great, and I like to incorporate that in ways, but that doesn't usually come into my communication style. Mm. I want people to just tell me if something is wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't want any power exchange stuff that might be going on to interfere with that. So like, you know, I'm communicating with the people that I'm wanting to tie with. You know, we're talking about what we're going to do and what works for them and figuring out kind of a little bit of a plan. Maybe we decide what harnesses we're going to use if we're doing a suspension. And usually I'll maybe have in my mind one position that I'm going to start with. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I've gotten into that position, I get into a pretty intense headspace of just like being, I don't know, it's like kind of adrenaline. Like it's just very, I get very into spacey. The scene. Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's like a top space, right? Like yeah. I get into this top space and then things are just moving and happening and like we're going wherever it takes us and we're communicating all that while any steps that we're taking, I'm like, usually like communicating to my bottom in some way that like, oh, like let me know if this is too much or
yeah. Are there any red flags that can come up during this process for you where you're either like, I don't want to tie this person again or I'm done tying right now?
I mean, observation is also a really big thing in the way that I tie. Like I like to I'm observing the rope the whole time. I'm observing the person that I'm tying. I'm observing how the rope is working with the person and all that, trying to keep everything, you know, mitigate any safety risks as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely things that I'm looking out for as a red flag for safety. So like if people start to sweat profusely, like if my bottom is starting to sweat profusely, that's usually a big sign that like this is very difficult and maybe it's not, we need to come down right now. Mm-hmm. It might be. Mm-hmm. And so that's usually something that I'll check in with. And like, also I'm moving into the next thing because obviously like this is a struggle. And sometimes as a bottom, I can definitely vouch for stopping in the middle of when somebody is having a really hard time in something being like, oh, that sucks. What can I do? It's like, well, if you were already doing something, then,
right,
you know, we wouldn't be,
right.
I don't know. Now it's becoming too much. And so trying to just like take preemptive steps to like start moving if somebody's struggling, out of something that seems like it's hard for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and like, I did want to revisit this and bring it up into this section. You mentioned the concept of power exchange. There's another concept of authority exchange where you're temporarily foregoing your authority so somebody else can make decisions for you. Do you feel that that's kind of an example of, hey, I'm giving you the authority, I'm giving you the power over me to tie me in this thing. So you're asking me what to do. It's like, I don't know. I gave you the authority to do the thing, so stop asking me to do it. Is that one of those examples?
Or is that a little bit of a stretch? Yes and no. I mean, so when I am tying, I am making a lot of the decisions, yes, but that never gets in the way of if the person that I'm tying wants something, you know, like they always have the right to make any decision. If they say this thing needs to change and I think that's probably not what you're having a hard time with, I'm still going to do it because that's what they think they need and I'm listening to them.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, yes and no. There is power, but also the bottom should, the person who's being tied should also always have power as well.
Yeah. I'd love to return to this question.
I mean, really, we all know that the bottoms are in control.
Right? Yeah, I was just
always
gonna say,
in
like,
control.
We know. Exactly. We know.
Let the bottoms hit the floor.
I like to feel like I'm in charge, and I really appreciate all my bottoms for letting me feel that way.
This is why we call it.
It's just like, go. I hope you're having fun.
That's why we call it a power dynamic. And
correct.
It's just, ultimately, these are all games that we're all playing.
Are you telling me that bottoms are really tops and tops are really bottoms?
A little bit. I mean, not quite. No,
it's like a movie Tenet.
It's a cooperative thing. You know, it's like you're working together to create this thing that works for the both of you,
right?
Or the multiple of you. If there's multiple people in the scene, it's not like a you have the control. You will do all the things. I mean, you can do that. And actually, I know somebody who wants that specific dynamic, but it's a different conversation.
Fake Dom Kenny.
But the but the main thing is that yes, it should be a collaborative effort to some degree, which is a different mindset for some other people when it comes to other stuff like impact and.
I'm going to be real with you. If I'm in my world of kink, if someone views kink and the power dynamics that occur in kink as like real, I won't play with that person because
for sure,
they need to know that this is like all just for fun.
I think I was actually just discussing or like with fun, one of my friends.
Yeah, I mean like fun. We can define fun differently, but I'm just saying like, this is all just
this is an exercise that we're all in control of,
right? Like, none of this is real. It's all made up.
We're a cult, and we're just doing cult things.
Okay,
don't take it too serious.
But anyway, so one of the things I was talking about with a friend recently, and also somebody that I tie on occasion, was that I don't do rope with people who cannot say no. Because I don't feel good about that. Yeah, that's a big red flag to me. Yeah. If I don't trust that someone can say something's not working for them, then I don't feel safe tying them because I feel like I'm like that's a recipe for someone to get injured or for a boundary to get crossed, and I don't want to be part of that because that also sucks for me, right? Like it sucks for everybody in that situation. And I don't want to put myself in that situation if I can help it.
Right.
I want to hear more red flags and rope for you, either as a bottom or as a top.
And maybe
when you're negotiating.
Communication styles is a big one for me. Yeah. So I do feel like if there's something where it's like, well, you can't say that or you can't say it that way, it's like, I don't agree.
you're wrong.
No one's going to hurt my feelings by saying something about my rope isn't working for the tie that we're doing.
Right.
I want it to work for both of us. Like, it's sexiest if you're enjoying it, right? So, and that's on both sides. So I want everybody
to have a good time. Wait, are you referring to tone policing or specific words that people are using?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, some people just don't like to be. And also, if you're in rope, and especially like if you're having an emergency in rope. Absolutely, like somebody shouldn't get mad about your tone. Like that's silly.
And when you're negotiating, what do you look out for specifically?
So, you know, usually by the time I'm getting to negotiating a tie with somebody, we've had some interactions, we've been around each other.
Okay.
Maybe I've seen them be tied by somebody else. Things like that. And so I usually can be like, okay, I feel good enough about what I know about this person to feel like, and also just having a conversation with the person that they're going to be like real about the whole thing, because that's the whole thing is I want also a connection that is real. However that looks between us, it doesn't have to look a specific way. It's not like I always want, you know, extreme power exchange in my rope, or I always want it to be giggles and laughs or whatever. Like both are really fun. And it's just like, what is the connection that is true between me and the person that I'm tying? And so if they can be true to that connection and they can be true to communicating about what's happening, then that's a green flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sounds like you care about
if I feel like someone is trying to impress me too much, like they want to say things that they think I want to hear and it doesn't seem like it's true. That's a red flag. Really valid feeling, but when people feel like their worth is determined by how a scene goes, that can be, I mean, that's a really valid feeling, and I understand that why people have gotten there because of the environment of the rope culture, especially in the past, but still today, in some places and with some people. If I feel like if the scene doesn't go well, that it's going to be like an emotional disaster for a person, then I probably don't want to get into a scene with them because
it might not go well.
I don't want to cause an emotional disaster for them.
That's a fact.
Well, I mean, yeah. And like,
and I don't want anybody to be like trying too hard to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've also really taught a lot of rope classes and stuff. So like, what do you feel about the state of rope that's actually missing from your perspective? Cause like you mentioned that whole, like, people are just assuming if it fails as a scene, then I failed as a bottom or I failed as a top or whatever. But do you feel there's any other things missing or I guess incorrectly determined?
So you bring to you brought up teaching. Do you mean from an educational perspective or like from a scene culture kind of perspective, what I think is missing, or just like all around?
So just to simplify the question, we'll just keep it on teaching because we've talked a lot about the culture, but just to hone in on the teaching part.
So the educational environment that I've seen kind of, you know, U.S. rope go through, mm-hmm. There's been some, like I said, some moves in the right direction where mm-hmm. we're becoming less centered around dominant white men being mm-hmm. the people who are teaching rope classes. I think we still put people on a pedestal mm-hmm. who are, you know, successful or desirable rope tops, especially to the point where it can be dangerous for everybody involved, mm-hmm. right? But, mm-hmm.
How so?
Especially for new bottoms and stuff, when people are put on a pedestal and everybody's like, oh, that person's so great.
Right.
That's something that can be taken advantage of. We see that a lot.
I can speak on that a little bit just to add some coloring to that particular comment. Yes, people will come say, oh my gosh, you should tie with Orange. Orange is like the greatest rope top ever. You should totally tie with him. Orange can teach you this rope thing. And it's like, I can teach you a Guatemalan, which I've practiced and I've done that a lot. And I can do a little bit of stuff because I get a little nervous when it comes to suspending. But that puts a lot of pressure on me as a person who is receiving that, because now I have a whole bunch of new people. It's like, oh, I don't know who you are. I'm brand new. Would you like to tie me? It's like, well, now I got to go into this whole moral dilemma. It's like,
also, ability to tie something doesn't necessarily translate to ability to teach it. Yes. Education, right. Correct. Like correct. Teaching is a different set of skills.
Yep.
Agreed. And that's one that I'm still really learning. Like the rope thing, I've got a pretty decent handle on. The teaching thing, I'm working on still. It is a completely different skill and not everyone has it. Mm-hmm. And that I do think we still trip up on. Mm-hmm. Where we've got people who are good in rope, but they don't know how to teach or how to make teaching accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I can teach you what works for this group of people. You know, this top and bottom can teach you what works for that top and bottom, but that doesn't mean that it works for everybody.
Right.
And because it's easy for you, that doesn't mean that it's easy for everybody. And I don't, there's some...
Oh, it goes, some
stuff that I see happen in that vein.
It goes into the importance of knowing the basics of how a rope works. Like, one of the things that you focus on, from what I've learned from you, is that understanding what the structure is doing is more important than understanding the pattern of what you're tying. And when you understand what the structure is doing, then you can change it. You can make it different.
But also how the rope is interacting with the person that's in it.
Yeah.
And I think mm-hmm. when tops tie with bottoms who are mm-hmm. easier to tie the way that they tie, they think, oh, well, my bottom that I tie now has had such an easy time with it. Mm. And I can teach everyone how to do this. Mm. And not everyone can do that thing that their bottom can do.
Right.
And they don't realize it, I guess. I don't know. Like, I've heard lots of things where there's been a discussion on Instagram just this week where a lot of bottoms were talking about that kind of the state of rope culture and bottom education, which is really important, and how bottoms didn't used to have as much of a voice. And there specifically was like a workshop brought up where, you know, this person came to teach this tie that they had tied on their one partner many times and had a lot of success with it, I guess, or something along those lines, and tried to teach it to this whole group of people, and a bunch of them got injured because it wasn't actually something that was good to do.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe even like the demo bottom was injured, and I don't know. I wasn't there. But anyways, stuff like that happens when you try to fit people into a form, right? Like you're like, oh, well, this person can do this, so I think everybody can do this, and I'm going to teach it without tying it on different body styles. And that's another thing about education is like you have to, in my opinion, like you need to work with different body types and yep. people who have different levels of ability or mobility, and try to figure out how something can be accessible to more than just mm-hmm. Small, flexible people or yes, something.
Absolutely.
I think rope is such a good example of like the need to be flexible in how you approach every individual person. It's like you said early on, it's an interaction with individuals. It's not, you can't apply a formula to everyone you meet, because it simply won't work. That's so much of kink too. I mean, like you look at any other kinky activity, and if I had a dom or a top ever say to me like, well, I did anal this way with somebody before, why isn't it working with you? I'd be like, I have a different asshole than that person. Right. Like, what a weird question. What a weird thing to say.
Right, it's coming back.
I'm just saying, no one would ever say like, I did this with someone else, why isn't this working for you?
Right.
Yeah. Like, and yet in rope, it's acceptable for these, you know, like big names in rope to be like, this is how I do it, and you have to do it that way.
Yeah, it becomes a default in the rope mindset, which is really frustrating, because on the note of TK, there's many adaptations to the TK's the Takate Kote, people might have seen it, where you have rope going across the top, you have the kunikis and everything, hands behind the back. But with the TK, if you know you can adjust it, you don't have to put that person's hands high. Also, TK happens to mean high hands, but it's not what it actually directly translates to. It's something else, but it's a different conversation about the whole culture that's been kind of appropriated and other stuff. But once again, unless we're doing a 90-minute episode, which I totally advocate for.
Not today.
It feels like it's already has been.
It's probably has. It's definitely one of those, thunderstorm. Like, it requires a little bit more investigation, which goes into, are we willing to learn? And it goes into what Luna was saying earlier, is like, people need to have a willingness to learn. And there's people who just want to stick with it. They want to have their orgasms, is in the corner, and tie their bad rope, and then, you know, charge somebody $40 to learn from them. It's like, why?
It sounds good, because you have people like Luna who are like, fuck the system. Yeah. I'm going to make my own space. And that's how, like, a new generation of, you know, rope, all individuals in rope will be able to, like, come through. So,
yeah, I mean, leave it to the queer and trans community to make things better in pretty much every community, right. But definitely within kink.
First steps sure. always too.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll move in this direction in about another 6-7 years. You'll see.
Yeah.
Like,
I do think that a lot of the queer and trans educators that are out there are newer though. And so we are still learning how to be educators successfully. And so that's some of the stumbles of the baby challenge. Steps in the right direction is that we're getting rid of these problematic educators who have a lot of experience, and maybe they were really good at teaching, but they suck, and we're getting rid of them, and we're bringing in all new people, and there's trial and error there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's learning experiences for all these educators, and so I mean, I think the intention is definitely going in the right direction, where I see people intentionally hiring more queer and trans educators, and it's working its way.
What's your favorite brand of rope?
Brand?
Is there brands of rope?
So
I think he means like type, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, like the type of rope that I tie with the material. I don't, sadly.
Hey, look, because I get it. Like, I like a particular kind of pin. Maybe there's a particular kind of rope out there. You're like, yeah, go support.
You know, it's actually been a little bit of a struggle recently, because like there's have been changes in like supply and demand, and and also just like quality of things, and finding the rope that I like has been a little bit hard. I like to tie with very loose lay jute, little bit thicker than 6 millimeter, but not much. It's like nice and soft. I really like all the rope that I have now, but it's old and I need a new set if anybody wants to send me some jute.
we will put your information out there.
And if it's good, then I can send customers your way, because I know a lot of people who are looking for the kind of rope that I'm looking for and struggling to find it. And I've been trying to convince someone local who has spun the set of red rope that I have currently. And I'm like, they stopped spinning rope, and I'm trying to convince them to start spinning rope again, because
pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Jute. It works in the ways that I want it to for the things that I, you know, work with. But
that's great.
Do you have to buy the most expensive thing?
What?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. No, like, as a matter of fact, I am a cheap person. I want to buy the not most expensive thing. I want to buy it cheaper if I can. And so usually I'm buying rope that is untreated and treating it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's treatments for a natural fiber rope that you might put like oils or waxes on
this
to kind of preserve.
This is so important. Yep. This is all stuff I had. I just had no idea. So that's...
And there's pros and cons to every type of rope that you might use.
Mm.
And there's different risks and mitigations that you have to make. And I don't think that the kind of rope that I tie with is necessarily the best or the safest. It's just the one that I like. Mm. And the people that I tie also like it. And
individual choices.
Feel safe with it in the ways that we're using it. So, yeah.
So we're coming to the end of our time together, and I'm hoping you can tell us about, we can finish off with just some like joyful experiences you've had in rope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came into rope and was bottoming quite a bit, and then I, you know, mentioned earlier having some experiences that kind of jaded me on that, and I stopped bottoming for a while, and I started bottoming again in the last like year or two.
Ooh.
And, yeah, it's been really nice to be back in the ropes. And I've had lots of joyful experiences. That's There's lots of videos on Instagram of me giggling in rope and just like big smile on my face and doing circusy things with all the queer people and queer rope jams and just
being able like to found your
connect.
People.
Yeah. People are what has kept me doing rope. The amazing people that I've connected with and, yeah, I mean, I have some really great tying partners that I love, and I love doing rope with them. And
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It sounds like the lesson here is for
the
anyone.
Ties that bond.
Oh, my God.
Boo! Boo!
It sounds like it's true. The lesson here is that, especially for someone who's new to rope, find the right people. Find the people
for sure.
That meet your...
Sometimes it can be hard, though.
Yes. Yeah. And trial and error.
Trial and error.
Luna, thank you so much for being here with us today. Mm-hmm. Where can the people find you?
Thanks for having me. Mostly on Instagram. My Instagram is private. but if you have a kinky account, then I'll probably accept it when I see it. It's at lunar_FAE. Or if I haven't accepted it and you heard me on the podcast, then you should send me a message and I'll see it eventually. And I will accept your follow request. And that's where I've got most of my active rope pictures and, you know, engage with people online and stuff. I'm also on FetLife, but I'm not very active. I've got some photos on there. They're all older photos. I did recently go on and post like a couple, maybe not recently, like a year ago, I posted some more recent photos.
Oh, no.
Well, maybe it was 8 months ago.
You know, like in the pandemic.
What is time?
Yeah, time is not real. So,
like, I still feel like it's only been 2 years since last time I hung out
with
some
Lunar
people.
Faye on Venmo me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That you can promote that as well.
Yep. Send the monies.
We're all about supporting each other in this. In the kink world.
Artist.
Mm-hmm.
On Venmo, it's with an underscore or not?
It is. It's the same as my Instagram.
Same as Instagram. That's great. Okay. Thank you so much for being here, Luna.
Thanks for having me.
Denzel, would you like to take us out?
Ooh, yeah. I got a nice series of words for y'all this evening. There is a thick load in the kitchen.